Welcome back, everybody, to the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. We've just come back from what we were calling, Tim, Scrambler Week last week, weren't we?
Were we? Yes, of course. Yeah, between the two of us.
I think in the previous episode, we called it Scrambler Week.
That makes sense. Yeah, that shows how rubbish my memory is.
So yeah, we'll catch up this episode and kind of give everyone the lowdown on the latest scramblers on the market.
Yeah, I would say so. Very appropriately named. Yeah, it was. It was a good week for me. I don't know how yours went.
Well, let's jump in with the old Honda CL500. That was out on that just before you, wasn't I? So I flew out to, oh my gosh, I think it was Seville. Yeah, it was. It was Seville. Yeah, we spent a day riding the new Honda CL500. Just as I arrived back at Stansted Airport, I believe you were flying out for the Ducati trip.
Yeah, roughly the same sort of time frame.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we called it Scrambler Week, you know? Anyway, it was good, actually. It's not a bike that I'd necessarily say would be top of my list straight away. You know, like if I was going to buy a Scrambler, I'd be looking at maybe something a little bit bigger. Mm. But actually, with the day on that bike, you start to appreciate it for what it is, which is quite an affordable little frugal bike that can be pretty good fun. Main competitor for this, mate, and this is kind of what I focused on in my review, is the Scram 411, which we were both on the launch of the Royal Enfield.
Yes.
Last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's start off by recapping your thoughts on that bike.
Well, on the Scram 411, we didn't get to take it off-road. We had like a gravel car park where we kind of pulled into, and that was literally the only place we could have done. Obviously, we took the Hemi off-road not long after that. So the same sort of base, if you like. So you can get a rough idea of what it might be like off-road, although obviously different proportions. As a town bike, as a city bike, it was great fun. It is a little bit gutless. My guess would be that the Honda would be a little punchier, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many bikes in this sort of segment of the market, like mid to small capacity, scramblery, you know, urban slash, I don't know what you call it, commuter, a little bit of off-road. Like, it is a bit niche, isn't it? It does all those things.
Yeah.
And there isn't really much competition apart from that bike. There is the baby Triumph Scrambler coming at some point in the next year, I'd guess, where they're partnering with Bajaj and building it out in India. But at the moment, literally, in the 400 to 500cc Scrambler segment, it's these two bikes. And I'd wholeheartedly agree. The Scram 411, it probably is better off-road. It's jacked up quite a lot more than the Honda, which has about 150 mil of ground clearance. You got about 200 on the Enfield, which is pretty good. But yeah, I came away from the Scram 411 road riding, which was the majority of the day, thinking I just need a little bit more punch than 20 horsepower for what is a relatively weighty bike.
And I think that's the road stuff though, isn't it? Right. So if you were to take that thing off road, as we found with the Himalayan, it's actually not bad. It's actually, you know, you don't really need much more than that in most situations, because you can still kick out the rear end on it if you want to.
Well, this is it. It's like a long single with lots of low down grunty torque. And I think the whole point of that, there was actually recently a Fortnite video with the Scram 411 where he took it across some dunes and stuff. And I guess a lot of what he was saying in that video is it'll keep chugging this engine, you know, really low in the revs, because that's how it's designed. That's what it's made for, which is great if you're doing that, or if you ride in, maybe it could be more designed for the Indian market, depending on the sort of riding you're doing out there.
Sure.
I mean, you're more likely to encounter off-roady type stuff, perhaps, than you are in the UK.
Yeah.
But I personally think most of these bikes in this market are really going to be ridden on the road. I don't think I've ridden many bikes where you have, apart from like 125s, but it's anything above 400cc that... Yeah. You twist the throttle and you're expecting something to happen and it just doesn't.
Yeah, that's kind of like you naturally sort of canter forward ever so slightly on any other bike, right? Where you brace for it, it's coming. And on that one, you lean forward and you're like...
You end up falling over.
Yeah, it's sort of more obvious. It's almost like, you know, when you walk up an escalator and it's turned off?
Yeah.
And your brain just can't compute because it's expecting them to move. And it just feels wrong. They're technically steps, but they don't feel like steps. It's the same sort of thing where you lean forward, you're like, oh, nothing's happening.
Yeah, to the point where I think, like, if you're on a quick moving road, A road or something, I'd be a little bit anxious about riding that bike.
It
doesn't quite have the pluck to pick the speed up quickly.
Yeah.
Especially at those sort of more serious speeds. As you correctly presume, the CL500 from Honda, it's got the parallel twin that you'll also find in the CB500F, the CB500X, the Rebel 500.
Yeah.
So it's more like 40 odd horsepower. You have to wind it up a little bit, get it revving, but that's what it does a lot better.
The CB500X then as well?
Have I ridden it?
Yeah. Have you ridden that one?
Yes, it's one of those random videos that gets like hundreds of thousands. I wasn't on a launch. It was in the middle of winter. Yeah. But for some reason, it's just such a popular series of bikes. So yeah, that did really well.
I'd seen that pop on your channel. And to me, I mean, well, you'll know because you're on the launch, I'm sure, and they mentioned it. But is it essentially a naked CB500X? Or what's the sort of difference between the two of them?
Good question. No, I would say. That is a good question. It's lower, almost certainly. Yeah. It's like 790 mil in the seat, the scrambler. Whereas I think the CB500X is like a little bit up above that. Like 820, 830 kind of rings a bell for that bike, but I could have completely made that up. If you did want it off-road, probably buy something else anyway. But if you had your heart set on a 500 Honda, for whatever reason, you know, a lot of people want to be near their dealer and they've got a certain price range and maybe, you know, Honda brand does it for them. Then the CB500X is probably more versatile in that respect.
Okay.
And you get more serious suspension and brakes and you got a much bigger tank. I think it's 17 liters on that bike, whereas it's more like 12 maybe on the scrambler. It's like a little
one. Yeah, it makes sense. It would be smaller and slimmer, obviously, for the look.
More wind protection as well. So it can tour, it can do a bit of off-road. It is basically like a baby adventure bike on a budget. Yeah. The CL500 is, well, actually the front frame, like the main part of the frame is the same as the Rebel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so the engine and frame are the same as the Rebel 500.
Because that I've ridden and I like that bike a lot. It was really good fun.
It's just, I've sat on one and I'm like, this is a little too low for me. It's 690 mil in the seat.
Yeah.
So if you're really anxious about being a new rider and being able to get both feet down, I can see why that appeals. Also, there aren't that many small cruisers. So if you do want that riding position, but I would say for me, probably I'd discredit it. Like if I had a short list, that one would probably be out eventually just for being that low.
Yeah, I think it's a special case, that one, because it's, I can fully see the application for it. Like if you want a little commuter and you want something the same as, basically it's origins, like the original Rebel.
Yeah.
It's the point was that it's this tiny little toy thing that you can just hop on and just pop out on. And it's not a very serious bike, you know? And definitely just for short trips and commuting. Or like you say, if you're a new rider or if you're a little bit more nervous getting on a bike, then it's very approachable.
Yes, that's it. But I think if you want something that feels more regular, then this is... So the way they've done it is put a different swing arm, different wheels, and a different subframe as well. So longer, much higher up. They made it stronger as well. So it's single seat, isn't it, the Rebel?
Yes.
They made it stronger so you can off-road, take a passenger, maybe put some luggage on as well. So like thicker pipes to do that. So yeah, it's kind of most similar. It's like the Rebel,
right?
But with the wheels off the CB.
So it's jacked up, yeah. Because the other thing on the Rebel is it's got these little, I think it's 16-inch wheels.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Yeah, it's tiny little thing. Yeah,
with like the balloon tires on it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So it's a 19 front and 17 rear.
Okay.
So yeah, all round, like not just the power levels, but also the handling on the Scram. And I found that with the Himalayan as well, like pretty bad. Like the brakes are bad. Like everything about it, generally, I would say is like very budget. Bad brakes, bad suspension, cheap tires. Like the big spoke wheels feel kind of like washy. It's a little bit better on the Scram because it's a bit smaller. The build quality is not that great on it either. Like, I liked it. It's better than the Himalayan, the Scram, because it's more comfortable and it's got that more agile, smaller front wheel. I think it's a 19 as well. But I just came away from riding this Honda thinking, like, in almost every regard, this is, you know, faster, better engine, better built, better brakes, better tires, probably better suspension as well, shower stuff, more comfy.
Yeah, it looks that way to me. I think the other one that I compare it to, or in my head maybe, is the Benelli. And I've forgotten the name of it, but I'm going to say Limoncello. It's not.
It could be.
There's a Benelli. Hold on. It's a 500.
It's Leoncino, isn't it?
That's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was being facetious. I was, sorry, Benelli. So that one, I think as well in my head, is one that I would maybe throw in contention with.
That's like very close, actually. Yeah, that's very close. It's same price pretty much as the... As the Honda. I think, I don't know, at that price, you'd have to really want that Benelli. I think I'd probably be going for the Honda TBH.
Yeah. So I'd do the same thing, I think. It's a known quantity, a known entity, isn't it, really?
With that exactly. One. Whereas I'm not
going a little bit into the unknown with the Benelli. Yeah.
The only drawbacks, I suppose, with the Honda, and I'm still saying versus the Scram, because like the reason I suppose I'm talking about the Enfield so much is because they sell so well in the UK here, whereas the Benellis, they might sell a few, but like the Royal Enfield bikes are always in the top 10 best-selling, you know, non-scooter bikes in the UK. The only sort of downside, well, there's two downsides perhaps of the Honda. Number one be the price. It is like a grand more. I think you can, or just over a grand. So the Scram 411, you can get it for like 4,850 or something like that. So it's under $5,000. Sure. 5,999 for the Honda. So you got to figure out whether you think the improvement in ride is worth it. The other one's the Lux though, which, I mean, have you seen it, the CL500?
Yeah, I have. I didn't see it before I saw your Instagram post. I hadn't seen it with all the fairing on it, the extra little plastic bits on the front. Hand guards and headlight cover, right? But
without that, without the accessories, it really does look like, you know, I just said it rides like a Rebel 500, but with bigger wheels.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like as well.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, since you said it, I have to say, yeah, even like the tank shape, actually, it's and probably the same size. It's probably exactly the same.
Yeah.
But very, very similar.
I'm not sure if it is. Let's have a look, actually.
It's probably not the exact same, but it's very, very similar. And if they've changed anything, it's minimal on that. But I don't know. I quite like the looks of it, I think. I don't know which one between the two of them. I mean, Royal Enfield's gone a little bit more...
It is a slightly different, I've got to say, it's slightly different tank shape. It's a little bit more flattened off. Yes, it is Rebel-esque. Well, just to recap on the accessories we just mentioned. So I specifically picked a bike that had a high front mud guard, a fly screen and hand guards to make it look a little bit more interesting. Like they line all the bikes up. Some are accessorized, some not. Mm. And I just kind of got in there quick and was like, can you put me on one that looks cool? But the interesting thing about them is they're white. Yeah. They're not body matched. And that's a criticism I've seen in the comments of the pictures that I've posted where people are like, why is it white? But I think that's a period detail, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like it is. It seems like it would be.
Or is
be,
it cheaping out?
It also looks like it's literally just like, you know, when you buy like fairings for old bikes, like if you get like an old VFR, 400 or something like that, and you buy the you can buy the fairings,
yes,
just like without anything on them, so then you have to get the detail or paint it or whatever you need to do, but they look like that. They look like they're unfinished,
yes,
like they've just been injection molded and then shipped off, and then they're like, you deal with it, you paint it, whatever you want.
But stuff like the Fantic Caballero, that's another affordable little scrambler. They come with a white high front mudguard, and I think that's intended to be like a... But I get what you're saying. I think it would have looked a bit... I don't think it would have looked that good colour match. Maybe if they made them black, then they would see all of the bikes.
Well, I was going to say probably black I would go for. But the thing is, I guess it's because you had... Do you have the military green one?
Yes.
Yeah, whatever they've called that green anyway. But there was... I think just because it is quite a contrast between those two. Whereas if you look at the older kind of dirt bikes and stuff like that, and I guess sort of scramblers... I feel like the white accessories and fairing matched more with the color schemes they had at the time, which were probably lighter colors than like a dark green.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
See, it is quite a contrast where it's a little bit of a mismatch between the two, even if it is accurate.
So you were saying, out of the Scram 411 and the CL500, which do you think is the more aesthetically acceptable motorcycle?
Well, I personally think I like the look of the Honda more. There's something about its kind of proportions that I think just sort of speaks to me. But I do like the eye-catching kind of color schemes and graphics they've gone for in the Royal Enfield. I think actually they've done a really good job of making it look that kind of surfery vibe. I think it's literally just like the silhouette, the sort of shape of it, the main shape of it, I think I prefer on the Honda.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough call, isn't it? I would say that the Enfield is, it looks a bit more properly retro, old school, but just with like a popping paint job. Yeah. Whereas they showed us some of the styling cues actually from the old CL Hondas.
Yeah.
That they carried over to this one. Mm. So there is some attention to detail in terms of referencing older models in order to bring out that heritage and retro nature.
Mm.
But it's still got that modern design language, the modern Honda look with things like the four LEDs in the headlight, which you'll get on the Rebel as well.
Yeah.
And just the general shapes of it. And it's sort of halfway between. It looks like a Honda rather than looking like a really good baby retro bike or something like that, if you know what I mean.
I don't know if it looks sort of fat compared, but like, you know, when you look at like old, even when it comes to like modern cars and stuff, when they take off a classic line of theirs and they just reinvent it and bring it out again, they always look a bit bloated compared to just, if you talk like 60s design language. In terms of cars and bikes, this just looked a little bit cleaner. I don't know what it was, but I think Ross from the bike shed when I was there for the longest time had a Honda CL. I can't remember what size it was, but that was in our shop for ages. And we just got to stare at that for a long while. It was this dark blue one. I don't know if you ever saw it, but he'd he customized it, but not a lot. It's just he sort of cleaned it up a little bit. And that thing was gorgeous compared to, like I say, sort of modern bikes a little bit.
Yeah, realistically, like they couldn't have done a great deal more, I think, with this.
No.
Yeah, within that sort of platform and the Rebel sort of vibe and whatever. In the interest of keeping it affordable and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I think for me, the kind of conclusion was that it's a better road bike, which is where majority of people are going to ride. So if you like the looks and you've got the extra grand, almost certainly go for the Honda. Like, I had fun on it, mate. Honestly, sending it on some Spanish twisty roads, it was a lot more fun than I expected. And they know how to make these little bikes handle nicely. The CB500X is great on the road.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great little purchase. The only other thing is the Fantic Caballero. That's more off-road biased. Have you ridden one or?
No, I haven't, no.
It's more like a dirt bike with some, because that's what Fantic really make, is like enduro bikes and stuff like that. So it's a single, it's a big single. It feels taller, it feels lighter. Mm. And so for off-roading and still having the retro looks, it's a great choice. But when you ride it on the road, it feels like riding a bit like riding a dirt bike on the road, which is fine. But if most of your riding is on the road, then after a while you're like, oh, you know, I want something a little more refined. And the Honda ticks that box. So all in all, I thought it was a good effort from Honda. I'll see how it does in terms of sales, but I was quite impressed with it.
Mm.
The Triumph could mix it up a little bit, though.
Yeah, potentially, I would say so.
A little bargain baby Bonneville. Let's see how good that one is. But
interesting to see, how good it is and what sort of price it comes in at, definitely.
Yes. Yeah, it's a bit unknown. It's the first bike they'll launch in partnership with Bajaj. So who knows where that's going to come in, whether they'll still charge a bit of a premium for the Triumph brand, despite making it out in India, or whether it'll genuinely be, you know, more affordable. We'll see. Mm. But speaking of, you know, affordability, it's a nice segue.
Yeah.
You were straight out on the Ducati Scrambler launch. This is a bike we both rather like, I would say, sort of over the years, something we both positively reviewed, and you owned the Icon, didn't you? The first gen.
I did. I think it was a 2015, so I think it literally was one of the first batch to come out. Might have been only a year old anyway when they first released. I loved it. I know you loved it because I've still got a video somewhere of you taking mine out with your GoPro, and you can audibly hear your giggles over the top of it.
Well, I think you've got to find the right road, but that was like a gravelly, sweeping country road.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too high speed, but like, you know, you could chuck it about a bit. And for that sort of thing, it was perfect. For commuting as well, I think I can see why you had one in London. So yeah, we both liked it. Got to say though, before we get into the new one, you got to then say why you sold it. I can't remember, but...
Do you know what? I was trying to remember this morning. I was going around my kitchen and I was like, why did I get rid of that? I think it was probably just because I'm, I don't know, changeable like that. Changeable like the winds. And I just, you know, for whatever reason,
it was a good bike.
Get in my head that something else would be better. But the reason I'm so confused as to why I changed it is because of what I changed it for, which was the Motegi V9. But I don't know why anyone would do that. So, I mean, the V9 was a great bike, but I was like, why the hell did I don't understand. Because normally what I'll do is I'll bounce between a bike that can do distance, but is big and heavy, and then a small bike that's great for town. And then I'll just flip-flop between the two and I'll go, no, I need something for touring and distance because I'm sick of sitting on a small bike. And then I'll use that in a town and go, oh, no, I need a small bike because I'm sick of trying to battle through town with a big, heavy bike.
Yeah.
With the V9, I'm like, why the hell does that one make... Anyway.
In my mind, I think you were thinking that it was the best of both worlds. It was like a nice-looking retro, but you thought because it was cruiser style, you could do a bit of distance on it. Did that pan out or?
Yeah, you've remembered. Actually, that is, now that you say that, it rings a bell. So yeah, I think because I'd seen you'd had it, and I remember speaking to you at the time when you were borrowing it and saying about how comfortable it was. And, you know, it was actually, and it feels bigger than the engine capacity or the power.
Yeah.
It felt like a bigger bike somehow. So my theory, yes, correct, I think was that it might be better for distance, and it absolutely, well... It was slightly better, let's be honest. But the Ducati Scrambler is an awful bike to try and do touring or distance on because it's just so small. You just get batted around a little bit. It'll do it happily. I mean, it's not the bike that'll fail. It's you just because you'd be tired on it. Whereas if you're on something like, Africa Twin, Tiger, obviously that's going to be more comfortable. But even the V9 was slightly more comfortable, maybe because of the position and the fact that you could sort of shift around a little bit more in the saddle. But But yeah, I think that was the main reason. I think it was a curiosity pick, to be honest. And the V9 was moderately customized, so it just sort of looked really good. And it was a bit of a bargain, so that's why I switched up. But I do miss the Scrambler in a certain way. I had a really big love-hate relationship with it because it let me down kind of early doors with some electrical fault that I needed fixing. And
what was that?
That was the kill switch, actually. For whatever reason, the kill switch mucked up, and it, for those who don't know, stranded me on the A40 just as you were sort of like going onto the M40, just before my exit at night in the rain in the third lane.
That's quite a cheap fix, though, isn't it?
Yeah, if you can figure out what it is. So it took a little bit of investigating to what it was because we weren't really sure. I took it to a specialist actually around here, but even he took a few pokes at it to work out what the actual fault was. And then, it was easy enough to fix, but it shouldn't have happened. And it's never happened on another bike. And like I say, the fact that it did it in the third lane at night with no hard shoulder in the rain, I was like, if the traffic was worse, then I'd have been really scuppered where I was. That would have been a really dangerous and scary scenario.
When you say it was the kill switch, you're not saying that you just did that thing where...
I knocked the... Yeah, no, I didn't. No. Sounds like I'm saying I can't ride here.
Took it to a specialist. He spent a day sort of fault finding, and then he was like, at the end of the day, oh, you flicked the kill switch.
He just flicked the red switch, and that fixed it, funny enough. Electrical fault. No, what I mean is it was, what would you call it? Like arcing, I suppose. Whatever it was, anyway, it was malfunctioning, and it was chiming in and cutting out the engine. Of its own accord without touching the kill switch, nothing else. And even when I pulled over, that was the first thing I checked when I pulled over, and that didn't fix it. And I gave it like I was trying to sort of like switch it on off, trying to sort of jog it into life in case that was the fault, and it didn't seem to like it. So it was a fault.
You always get electrical gremlins. It's not, yeah, I know, this yeah. is not Ducati Scrambler specific.
It's Italian bike specific, but it's not Ducati Scrambler specific.
Anyway, so you got onto the you're out in Valencia, was it, for the yes. new Scrambler?
Yeah, have you been there before?
No. It looks amazing.
I love those roads. I mean, I you actually went to Almeria not long after me, and yes. I thought those are the best roads I've ever been on in my life. And then we went to Valencia, and on this bike, I was like, nope, these are slightly better. And they're both very, very good, but the route they took us on was fantastic. It was long, but it was really, really good and very appropriate for the bike.
But you also did city riding on the first day, right?
We did, yeah. We turned up all on our chin strap because of an early flight, and then rode through Valencia, through the city, did a bit of commuting in a foreign city. I was like, I need to be more alert for this. But we got through it. We got to the beach, actually, and did a fun sort of scavenger hunt of trying to find a photo. They set this thing up where they were like, you know, try and find an image that to you says Ducati Scrambler. So we had to go and find a place around these docks. It was quite a nice area, actually. So we just went exploring.
Perfect.
And took some photos. But yeah, even, I mean, around city, you know, it's going to work well. It's not exciting riding. But it's a perfect little city bike. The only gripe I had, and this goes on to sort of my favorite things of the bike specifically, the big gripe I had with mine was that the throttle on the original Scrambler was a light switch, and you either went on or off, and that's fine if you were going on country roads and you just wanted to open it wide and just blast off. So yeah. Blast off is not that powerful, but it's okay. Whereas in a city, you want it to be a little bit more measured than that, so that you can tease it a little bit and just ride a bit smoother. So with this one, they've given it ride by wire.
Great.
And the engine is now electronically managed, or more so. And that means that it is so much smoother.
Is it really?
The new version. Yeah, night and day. It's so much more refined in terms of, yeah, how precise you can be with that throttle control. And there's no lag as you sometimes get with ride by wire, so it's you know, there's it works really well, basically.
So that's what I quite liked about yours. I think we were just talking about me whooping into my GoPro while we were on like a country road, and I think that immediacy is quite nice. And that's probably what made it fun when you're at speed. When you when you're doing low speed town work, I can see how that becomes wearying. So in removing that snap. Yeah. You're saying they've made a better town bike, and you've got different modes now, right?
You do. And that's the other thing. So yeah, if you're craving that immediacy, and actually with the other people I was on the day with, I kept, you know, we were checking in with each other, and they were saying they didn't really feel much of a difference between the rider modes, but I have to say I did.
That's
pretty
because,
immediately.
Mate, you're in tune with the Ducati Scrambler.
It made me really, I guess because of the Scrambler, but it made me really question it because I was like, why aren't they? And then I checked it. I kept checking it for the rest of the day. I was like, no, I really can tell the difference between them. So you got road and you got sport. So no like rain mode as you'll often find on others, but road basically would take up that position because it's just a little bit more reserved, I guess. A little bit.
Yeah, a bit softer.
A little bit softer, more forgiving. So you do that in a town and that's absolutely fine. And then when you get out, and I left it in road for the majority of the first day, in fact, all of the first day, and then the first leg of the second day. And then I stuck it in sport when we were doing the little flybys and things. And I immediately felt that it was just, I said that it basically felt like you just wafted smelling salts under its nose. And it was like, what?
Comes alive.
Let's go. Yeah, it really comes alive. So it was much more alert, basically. It just makes the bike wake up a little bit more. Not that it was boring in road mode, because it was still just as fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those two things, that was the first thing that really, really stood out to me, and probably the biggest thing that stood out to me of that bike and why I liked it as much.
So much better throttle manners and versatility there.
Exactly that. And then the other thing that really I was obviously very happy to see was that it was still just as fun, agile, you know, predictable a bike as my version. And that's, for me, they feel like the Ducati Monster, because it, in essence, you know, is
very
shared
similar
roots with. So if you think about the older Ducati Monsters, of which my dad, it was the sort of bike I was like, my dad would feel so comfortable on this so quickly because it's so much like his S2R, but just, you know, a little bit more updated than that. And one of the things he says about it is just that, you know, every inch, you know exactly what the bike's doing. So if something pops up, or you go over some gravel or whatever, and maybe it sort of like kicks out on you or something like that, you can get it back a lot easier than you could with some of the bikes. So it's not on a razor's edge of performance where, you know, the suspension's so stiff and
yes,
and the throttle's so, you know, grabby and stuff that it will bite you if you, you know, don't use it properly. This one has enough leeway and play that for any kind of rider, you can get on it and just feel so comfortable. And it was the most comfortable I've felt, definitely, going around. I mean, they're instantly comfortable, but then it's my kind of bike. It's something I can really dial into.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. And they've also shed a bit of weight, haven't they?
A little bit. I can't say I noticed. I mean, so mine was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago that I got rid, and it would be impossible to kind of retain in my head what that feels like in terms of weight. So they have, it's 4 kilograms in total. They've actually gone over the engine, made that lighter. The clutch is lighter, like the battery's smaller. That's one of the ways they've managed to get it down. But yeah, I don't know that you'll really notice that. That's not the biggest difference. It's not very profound.
And I'm not criticizing Ducati for this because everybody does it, but I think in the press release, it might've said something like 7 kilos off the chassis, and you're starting to think, well, that's quite a lot, but clearly with the electronics and stuff, perhaps there's a bit of extra weight. And so actually the total
that
curb,
would make sense. So it balances. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not quite as big a saving as if you look at a specific component.
But then, and I said this in the review as well, it's always been a light bike. So if you can get 4 kilograms off a light bike, we're not talking about some big heavyweight. It's not some, you know, if you're trying to get some weight off a Harley, it's probably a little bit easier than it is off some little skinny Ducati Scrambler.
Yes.
So any weight savings are impressive. And it was never a weakness of the bike anyway, because it is so agile and nimble.
I mean, let's just take a quick look at the numbers on that. I'll get them up here. So the main competitor for this is the Triumph Scrambler 900, they call it now. It used to be called the Street Scrambler. So I'm just looking now, the Scrambler 900 from Triumph, total wet weight, 223 kilograms. Whereas the curb weight for the Scrambler Icon, the current gen, is 185 curb.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, given that they're a similar price, I think there's a couple of hundred quid in it. And given that, the Scrambler Icon makes 73 horsepower. Well done, mate. You got notes or just came to mind?
Yeah.
64 on the Triumph. And I mean, there's a bit more torque. It makes it sort of grunt much lower down, 3,000 RPM. It makes 80 newton meters. So it's much more of that gutsy. Whereas you've got something like
65 on the Scrambler.
Yeah, and it's high up. It's like 7,000. Yeah. But I think that gives you the difference between those two bikes is that the Triumph's substantial and it feels like that. It feels meaty and torquey and it's a bigger bike. Whereas you're going to get a lot more performance from the Scrambler. And if you're on open roads as well and you're willing to rev it out a bit, it's going to be a lot more lively, a lot more agile. And that's impressive, isn't it? That's what?
Yeah.
Nearly 40 kilograms less. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Massive. I mean, yeah, it's like a half a pillion basically taken off the back. Or you
slice
know.
Them what, down the middle or across?
Yeah, across.
They can still hang on then.
Exactly. Like, that was my thinking, logically, you see. But it is massive. Yeah. And it's noticeable. It really is noticeable. And I agree. I mean, like they suit different kinds of riders, I suppose. But all I can tell you is that there are a few bikes, and I'm sure you have the same, right, where you hop on it and there is no warm-up required. It's like I get this bike, I'm in tune with it instantly.
Easy
and the Scrambler is one of them. Yeah. And it's because I like I say, the monster element of it, the fact that I've ridden monsters, and that is why I like that one in the first place.
It's 10 grand now though, isn't it? The Scrambler Icon. And I think I was looking at that, having known that it started at like 8 a few years ago. And it went up to like 9-ish. Now it's 10 grand for the basic Scrambler Icon. And I was looking at that thinking it's quite steep. But actually, when you start to look at what you get in with the, you know, Brembo brakes, you've got more tech now, and the power and how light it is and how easy it is to ride. I mean, it honestly, as a first big bike, if you want something a bit retro, I think it's probably quite a good choice. It's not too intimidating, feels special. Yeah. I mean, you've got servicing costs maybe that might be a bit hard to stomach for a new one rider.
Yeah, and they will be. That's the one where, like, if you hear the word Desmo service, that's where people normally faint and hit the floor. Or sell the bike, which is often what you'll find on Auto Trader as well. You'll see it says, like, you know, funnily enough, it's always at the same sort of mileage.
Yeah.
So it definitely, the other thing that really stood out to me, and yeah, I think when you're saying about, like, the price of it, yeah, to me, I guess still, but then because I'm buying secondhand bikes, yeah, you go, ooh, a little steep. But then you look at the competition, and actually, it's not too far out of whack or out of line with its competition anyway. It's just that things are getting more expensive.
You've got the Triumph, $9,795 for the basic color. So you'll have to add a bit. XSR 700, that's $8,260. So that's probably the best. Best bet in terms of, like, value for money, and it's quite fun to ride. Similar power, sure. Quite light as well. But I would say it doesn't have that pride of ownership. There's not as much tech as well.
So. No, and you know, you're gonna have to go a long way to beat Yamaha on value for money as well, I think.
Yeah, exactly. If you're ever having a value for money conversation, it will always end with an equivalent Yamaha.
The pride of ownership, I think, agreed. And I think with this one, what's really nice to see is sort of ties into my third sort of thing that I took away from the day was the looks, because I remember seeing when you showed me the new one, or I saw you walking around EICMA, and I was like, oh, they've changed it, and I'm not sure I like it. It's a bit modern looking, and the idea was that it was, you know, playing on the heritage and it's a classic looking bike. But if you think of things like the, you know, the Husqvarnas, the Wipperlins and stuff like that, they're neo retro looking, where it's sort of like, it kind of is retro and kind of not, where it's got its own little thing going on. I think they're sort of straying into that territory a little bit more. And I have to say, seeing it in the flesh, I said to the guys there as well, it's quite funny how quickly the last version can start to look dated when you're looking at the new one. And it's overtaken it. I actually prefer the look of this one now than my version. You can see that they've put a lot of effort into that design. And the big thing is, on mine, where you had coloured tank and then metal panels, which were harder to get off if you wanted to do any sort of customization, it was a little bit trickier to sort of make it a little bit more unique. This one, it's metal tank underneath, which is the silver part, and then plastic covers on the surround. And it takes 30 minutes to 45 minutes to change the entire color of the bike.
Yeah.
So if you're a bit flush and you want to buy yourself, like, multiple panels on any given day, you could decide to just change the color of your bike and go out.
So you can convince your neighbors that you've got two bikes.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you could mix and match. You could could make it a little bit more unique, right? You can make a combination of colors if you really wanted to, or you can take it off. And what I was always tempted to do is, like, you know, put your own vibe on it. If it's like sticker bomb it or paint it yourself, you know, it's easy enough to do and you could change the color of it pretty quickly.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awesome. What about the TFT display?
Don't like it. No, I'm the same as you. It's clearer, it's better. Clearly, it's better than the last one.
It's got phone stuff as well, like Bluetooth. You can 100%. Get nav. Yeah, blah blah blah.
Functionality massive. But I think the same with you. If you look at the likes of Triumph as an example, I think that their instrument clusters and sort of like configuration often do look better. And I think you probably could get away with making a classic looking display on there. I don't think they needed to go that full digital route, but, you know.
So something like, I think, we talked about the Scrambler 1200 from Triumph, which is TFT with all the functionality, but it's round.
Yes.
And then it has some sort of displays around the edge. And so it feels like a great, what would you call that? Like compromise of a sort of retro aesthetic.
Hybrid of the two.
Yeah. Whereas this Ducati one is much more like a square. It's got a little bit of detail in the surround, but ultimately it is a square TFT, or rectangular basically. Rather, TFT dash. Which, I don't know, like you say, maybe they are leaning more into that modern, but also retro, neo-retro, as you called it. Like, much like the Honda we were just talking about, the CL500, has a bit of a balance of the two. Mm. And so maybe you can afford a few things like that. But it was a nice dash as well on the old one, if a little bit simple.
Yeah, I think it worked well. It was similar to the Husky, because the Husky's, you know, is single colour. It's not a colour TFT or anything like that. But it's got all the information you need. Having a colour on there doesn't make a jot of difference at all. Because as long as the information is clear, that's fine. But I just think going for something a bit cleaner. I quite like sort of the Thruxtons and stuff like that, where Triumph have got an actual manual, what's it called?
Analog clock.
Analog clock, yeah, analog dial and stuff. But you've got a little digital display in it with the information you need, right? Yeah. And that's all you need. All you need is to see that it says road and sport.
But this depends if you're going to use the phone functionality, which...
Oh, then, well, yeah, that's true. You can't do that on the
drive. Then you need it.
Then I'm talking absolute tosh. Then yeah, you're right.
That's the call to make, isn't it? I suppose if you're going to use that stuff, it'll be valuable. If you're not, then yeah, it doesn't really matter.
No,
so much.
You are quite right. So in terms of that, it's got functionality. I just feel like you say, I guess yeah. Then the Scrambler 1200 is the more obvious parallel to it, and you can definitely go with a modern looking information, but you know, a more classic looking aesthetic. But hey.
So in summary, good, bad.
In summary, I want one. And,
really?
Yeah, it made me miss mine, which is always a good start. Obviously means that you liked it. And if I was buying now, I don't think, knowing that it's out there, I would find it hard to buy myself the previous gen. I think I'd probably want the new one, however that works.
Very good, mate. Well, that's the Scrambler week tied up. Both positive reviews, but very different bikes, I'd say. Yeah, like the CL's massively... you know, beginner and budget focused. This is a bit more spicy and, you know, performance, a bit more premium. So yeah, it's been very good. What's coming up next for you?
For me, I think the next thing on my calendar actually might be a Ducati day, just going to the factory in Silverstone.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We're going up to do that together. I did that last year. So good. Just outside the Ducati office, they line up every bike in the range. It's one of those days where you feel like, I can't really post this on Instagram because it's one of those dream days for a lot of people. Yeah. And you feel like you're just rubbing people's day. But it's quite hectic trying to film as many bikes as you can in one day. So yeah, we've got that to look forward to. In between that, I've actually got the Street Fighter V4S. I just picked that up. So very excited to ride that. But another bike showed up. Well, I went and collected it, actually. Another bike arrived at Motobob HQ. And that's the new KTM 790 Duke, which, you know, I think we've got a little bit to talk about here because it's their kind of new budget-friendly middleweight offering. It's an old model. The 790 Duke existed before the 890 Duke, but they brought it back and just brought the price down because now it's made by CF Moto, which is in China, one of their partners. And Tim recently went out on the launch of the CF Moto range, so you had the opportunity to ride a lot of them. You came back saying you were quite impressed by the build quality on those, weren't you?
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah, I was. I was going into it skeptical, I would say. They looked good. It was a good quality finish and they were nice bikes to ride. It left room to impress. Let's put it that way. So there was nothing on it that I could sort of see looked budget or, you know, like they'd rushed it or just, you know, for the sake of it. It was good quality. And they rode well. The only thing for me was the throttle needed a bit of refinement, but, you know, that'll come. And that's easy enough to fix as well.
So the 790 Duke, when I picked it up, I've got to say, had a look over the bike. And I don't know, like, if it's just assembled there or some of the components are made there. I need to really get my head around that before I do the review. But it just feels so similar to, you know, an 890 Duke or the previous 790 Duke.
Yeah.
Like the buttons, the dash, the bodywork feels similar. They've always felt quite plasticky to me anyway, KTMs. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like you were taking something that was very like a retro, let's say like the Bonnevilles or whatever, where there's a lot of metal and the feel is meant to be kind of slightly more old school and luxurious. Mm. If you took that and tried to make it in China, maybe you'd come into problems, but the KTMs might be ideal. They've always been lightweight, quite modern materials. Mm. Yeah, happy to use plastics. Yeah, I'm super impressed as well. I know it's made to KTM standards and all that. And obviously the proof is in the pudding of having it, you know, ridden over a year or something to see what kind of reliability experiences owners have. Mm. But mate, I'm very impressed. I quite want to take it to Superbike Factory because they do have some 790 Dukes in stock from like 2 years ago. Mm. Just put them next to each other and see really if there's any visible differences. So I might do that for my review. But also, can I just say, what a ridiculously fun bike to ride. It's like 2.5 hours across the Cotswolds to get to Silverstone from here, pretty much. I took my absolutely shagged SV650S because Normally, I use my Tiger 800 to get around to pick up press bikes, and I leave it at their garages. Mm. But that's at Ducati because of the Street Fighter.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, how am I going to get to KTM today? And my only option was this SV650S, which I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast much, but it's a bike that I bought in order to kind of fix it up on the channel and do a bit of a build series, but just haven't had time to start that yet. And we're still trying to find the right like sponsors and partners to do it, etc. It was my only option, but it's been dropped on one side. Mm. The levers are being swapped for like shorties. It's got those big, massive Oxford hot grips. Mm. The mirrors are not being tightened up. So I kept pushing them out and it kept flapping back in.
Delicious.
It's got that, the exhaust system as well, which is basically
I'm still, my ears are still ringing.
Yeah.
Did you miss off your car alarm when you started it?
Yeah. It's just it's like a really stubby cam with the baffle out and there's no cat because the cat was in the silencer, I think, on those bikes. It was an experience riding that 2.5 hours, mate. And it was fine. It's actually really good. Like, it's such a beautiful engine, that 650 from Suzuki. And it's going to make a great bike at some point, but it just needs everything doing. Like, the suspension needs servicing because it feels a bit notchy and doesn't feel good. The brakes need bleeding and maybe new pads and stuff. Mm. Like, the tires are ropey as well. Like, they're so old that they've gone really hard, you know?
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
And they're not even good ones anyway.
No.
And then I jumped on the 790. Anything's going to feel good after that amount of time on my bike. But it's just that we talked a lot about throttle application and maps. And like, I think what they do so well, the KTMs, is just make it super fun in that first half of the throttle delivery. Because I did notice when I was getting up to motorway speeds, if you fully pin it open, there's not loads and loads of power there in the same way that you do have that with the Street Fighter V4S, of course, that I've been riding. It's got twice as much power, so naturally it's going to feel a lot faster.
Yeah.
But still, the immediacy when you just open the throttle and it's not snatchy, it just bloody shoves forward as soon as you twist it, and it makes it an absolute hoot to ride. And very upright, though, I noticed, like, the bars are here, so you just kind of sat upright on this very lightweight little thing and then just twist and bomb, and it really put a big smile on my face, to a point where now I'm considering how do I anchor this and review it. I'm not going to say I was going to buy one.
No, right. Yeah, I thought you were going that route. Like, that SV is going to go. I'm going to just keep this one.
The SV is going to be probably the best motorcycle ever made once I've finished with it. But yeah, I've talked a lot on the channel about the Honda Hornet and how at $6,999 launch price, it's great value for money. And they've given that a very lively throttle map, and it you know, it's pops and burbles at the exhaust and the front wheel will come up, and it's very nimble and agile, and they've tried to make it, I think, really fun, and it's a lot of fun, that bike. $7,999 now, though, for the KTM, and it obviously is that little bit more bonkers. And now I'm thinking, I've been saying the Hornet's great at $6,999. Well, where does the KTM fit into this, though? And like, does that Chinese build mean anything? Because if you look at it on paper, it's such an exciting bike to ride, lots of fun. If you like orange and you like the looks, then you could justify that extra grand versus the Honda.
I would say in their favor as well that CF Moto have put a 4-year warranty, I think, on their bikes. So if they're confident enough to slap 4 years on there, then presumably the same thing with KTM, and they need to make sure the KTMs are going to work. I don't know what the warranty is like, but I mean, like, they're not going to want to, if they made some shoddy 790s and they went out and they all got recalled, or, you know, people kept bringing them back, then KTM's not going to continue partnering with them, are they?
Yes.
So it's in their favor to make the best product they can. So I'd be surprised if it's going to be any less reliable, let's say, than the older 790.
I wonder if it says about the warranty on their website. I'm just trying to look. It'd be interesting if they also did that. Let's see. KTM 2023 790 warranty. 24 month, not 24 years. I think
24. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, I think initial impressions are that the build quality feels appropriate for a KTM and kind of up there. So I'm pretty impressed with it to start, and we'll just see how we get on. There'll be a full review on the channel. As for all the bikes we've discussed actually in this episode, the CL500 out this week. Hopefully, your Scrambler review out tomorrow as well. And then 790 to follow shortly after. So do keep your eyes peeled, everybody, if you want to catch up with those. I think that's it for today, Tim.
Yeah, I would say so. Thank you for your company.
Thank you for listening, everybody. And we'll see you in the next one.
Bye-bye.